Blog Talk.
Welcome back to another edition of the Just the Freedom Show. I'm your darling and dashing host, Push Nevada, and coming to you live from Tempe, Arizona. We have a very interesting guest tonight. Historian Chris Myers is here to discuss a new HBO movie, Iron Jawed Angels, a graphic depiction of the battle women fought to gain voting rights here in America. But before we talk about the movie, we're going to talk a little bit about the history of suffrage in our country. And Chris Myers, she is the director of Heritage and Outreach at the Alice Paul Institute in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. And she's going to talk to us a little bit about the suffrage movement. Chris, are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, this is very interesting topic. Why is the suffrage movement important at this time in American life?
Well, I think people often forget that with the women's suffrage movement, when the 19th Amendment passed, one half of this entire nation received the right to vote, and that was women. That was white women, black women, women of all different races and religions and ethnicities, all received the right to vote in 1920. So I think it's one of the stories that really form the backbone of our American legacy, what this country is about, and what we fought for with our Constitution and the idea of democracy and citizenship.
Okay, so you're the director of the Alice Paul Institute. Go ahead.
I'm the director of Heritage at the Alice Paul Institute. Yes.
Okay.
And as the director, I run tours and do presentations and educational programming at the site.
Mm-hmm. So maybe if you can just talk a little bit about the suffrage movement or what's going on at the Alice Paul Institute. And as I think about the suffrage movement, I'm thinking about the whole Elizabeth Stanton and Frederick Douglass and Sojourner Truth. She makes the speech where she says, "Ain't I a woman?" Is that some of the things that you talk about at the Heritage Institute?
Absolutely. I do a presentation where I talk about the women's suffrage movement. And by the way, this is the 90th anniversary of the 19th Amendment. So we're celebrating this year at the Institute. And now Alice Paul, she's really a second or third generation suffragist. Her foremothers were Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and she really admired Susan B. Anthony, a fellow Quaker like herself, and a fellow activist. So she really followed up in those founding suffragists' footsteps.
Mm-hmm. So what are the most significant moments of Alice Paul's career?
Well, I mean, what she's most known for is picketing the White House in 1917. She okay. led a very peaceful protest in front of the White House, and the women simply held banners with messages to the president about, you know, what will you do for woman suffrage? And in the summer of 1917, the suffragists were arrested for obstructing sidewalk traffic. So Alice Paul and her fellow suffragists went on hunger strike and were force-fed and beaten inside the jails. So most people do not know Alice Paul's story and the 168 women that were beaten severely inside the prisons in 1917 because they wanted the right to vote so badly.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's really difficult to think about the suffragist movement without talking about Frederick Douglass and. Mm-hmm. Particularly how black women are responding to the suffragist movement. And a lot of people don't know how Douglass and the white suffragists kind of intertwined and how they came together as freedom fighters and joined in the movement and things. So can you just talk a little bit about that, with that whole...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I mean, Frederick Douglass and women like Sojourner Truth coming into the suffrage movement, I don't think that the suffrage movement would have existed without the interrelatedness of both the suffrage movement and the abolition movement in the early days. So Frederick mm-hmm. Douglass was there from the beginning in 1848 when Elizabeth Cady Stanton decided, with a group of friends, decided to hold a women's convention in Seneca Falls, New York. Frederick Douglass was there, and he was a huge supporter of women's suffrage. And when the crowd protested Elizabeth Cady Stanton's suggestion that women should fight for the right to vote, it seemed like she was going to lose the battle, but Frederick Douglass stood up and said, yes, you know, women should have the right to vote. You know, we won't have true equality until men and women stand on equal ground. So it was really his support in the early days that got the women's suffrage movement rolling in 1848. So his early support did a lot for the movement. There were disagreements later on, but I don't think that the movement would have been as successful as it became if it wasn't for early supporters like Frederick Douglass.
Well, okay. So because at some point, probably in the initial stage, the early development of the movement, Stanton was sort of like outraged that white men would like place black men above them in
yes.
the whole women's rights thing. And how did – because it seems like – white men were sort of like pitting white women and black men and or white women and black people against each other. And Stanton kind of seemed as though she was really against that white men did not have what she thought was a racial alliance. Like, you should fight for white women as opposed to black people's rights.
There are definitely a lot of efforts to divide the women's movement and fight against the abolition movement. And, you know, she had come from this tradition. She had gotten interested in women's rights when she went to London for an anti-slavery convention and was told because she was female, she needed to sit behind a curtain and was not allowed to be heard. So her and Lucretia Mott decide to form this women's movement, which very early on aligned with an abolition movement as well. So in the early days, they did ally themselves. There is a conflict that happens after the Civil War years, and these new amendments are passing, but they don't include women. So that's when you really see a division that happens between particularly white women and African-American men and women.
So at what point does Sojourner Truth come into this movement? Because it seems as though white women chose her.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. She was a really great speaker, really great person to have in the women's suffrage movement. She came around in the 1850s. 1851 is when she delivers that brilliant speech called Ain't I a Woman? And she was such an eloquent speaker in her way. I love how she talks about, people always talk about white women, they need to be helped into carriages, but nobody's ever helped me into a carriage. You know, look at my arms, they're very strong. You know, I've been whipped. I have never been treated like a lady. So, she really attacked people's sense of, social sphere, separate spheres for women, because she said it didn't exist for black women. So she was an early orator for the women's suffrage movement and really attacked the idea of this lady sense that women could not vote because they were going to be ladies and had no sense. And she talked about, nobody ever treated me like a woman. Nobody ever treated me like a lady. So let's get rid of this idea and start looking at the facts. She's
so
a great speaker.
So is it true that she, I think at some point, I don't know if it was during that particular speech, some man challenged her, thought she was a man, and she opens up her blouse and reveals her breast?
At a little bit later on, she does. She receives a challenge from the audience. You're not a woman. How can this woman speak so eloquently? So she opens her blouse and she shows him her breast. You know, hey, I'm a woman and I'm saying these words. The same thing happened with Frederick Douglass. A lot of people challenged him that he couldn't have been a black man because he was such an elegant orator and writer. And, indeed, he was a black man, and she was, indeed, a woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking on that, Sojourner Truth and her eloquence, I've even read where some historians have challenged the validity of that whole Ain't I a Woman speech, and to say that white women actually wrote it. I've even heard that before, so that's always interesting. Let's talk about the movie. Is this a suffragist movie, Iron-Jawed Angels?
Yes, it is. Iron-Jawed Angels. Hilary Swank plays Alice Paul. Really focuses on that picketing campaign in 1917, leading up to women's right to vote in 1920.
Mm-hmm. So, you've seen the movie. Is it pretty accurate? I mean, is it historically accurate?
Yes, it's actually, they did a great job with making the movie very accurate. And we do have a discussion guide at the Institute where we talk about, maybe some composite characters that exist in the movie. But they actually kept the historical facts in the movie and did a great job with also making it very entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you think about today and what's going on in American society today, is it important? I mean, is it important to talk about the women's suffrage? In other words, what's the connection between the then and the now?
I think with women's suffrage, what is lost today is the story. It's not presented in our historical text very well. If you see it in a history book, it's probably a very brief mention of women's suffrage. So I think, particularly with a movie like Iron-Jawed Angels, as we come around to every election season, and we just went through a big one, people talk about, what's our legacy? Why should we vote? you know, what is important in this country to talk about. And I think that's when you start to remember issues like the civil rights movement and the women's suffrage movement, that people fought very long and hard to gain full citizenship in this country and to go out and cast their ballot just as everyone else did. So I think learning that story and keeping it alive is what's important about the suffrage movement and how it connects to today.
Yeah, I'm thinking about Bell Hooks' book, her feminist theory book, Ain't I a Black Woman in Feminism. Have you read that book?
I have not. I've read other works by her, but I have not read that book.
Yeah, and she says a lot of, you know, interesting things about the suffragist movement. She talks a lot about Stanton and the other players, key players, and she has such a grim analysis of the movement,
mm-hmm.
As to say that Black women were like totally left out, and they were the ones that were neglected in that whole movement. For her, it was, well, white men were against them, the whole white male patriarchal oppression, but so were Black men, you know. White women,
yeah.
Of course, but so were Black women. They were this left sort of like to fend for themselves. And
yes.
So is that – go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. I mean, the idea with white with Black women being marginalized, not only by white and Black men, but by white women as well, is a really great argument, because that is exactly what did happen with both groups. You know, women were excluded from male groups, in the early years with suffrage, and then white women did also exclude Black women from participation. So these women really were grappling with how to redefine what a woman was, and also, you know, the race issues. They were criticized for when they did align with Black women. And so, you know, Alice Paul is criticized for a parade that she held in 1913 when Ida B. Wells says to her, you know, you don't want Black women to march in this parade. And Alice Paul says, no, I didn't say that. But it was a contingent of Southern white women that refused to march if Black women marched. So the compromise that was reached with Alice Paul was that a group of men would march in between the Southern women and the Black women. So it was interesting race relations. I think everyone was trying to figure out where to step, you know, who to align with, how to not lose alliances. So I think that there's a lot of murky water. And in the suffrage movement particularly, there is some outright racism. A lot of women protected suffrage by saying, if you give white women the vote, we can outnumber Black men and women, particularly in the Southern states. So that was a very popular argument that was used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Katie Stanton is quoted as saying, if Saxon men have legislated thus for their own mothers, wives, and daughters, what can we hope for at the hands of Chinese, Indians, and Africans? I protest against the enfranchisement of another man of any race or clime until the daughters of Jefferson, Hancock, and Adams are crowned with their rights. Wow.
Yes, very powerful words. And she said this. She's talking about a lot of immigrants are coming into the country, and it is so easy for them to become citizens and to participate in elections, and she's furious. She also says similar words after the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments pass after the Civil War, and Black men are given the right to vote, and she felt that, you know, she was told that suffragists, if they supported the war effort, that women's suffrage would be passed after the Civil War, and it never happened. And she thought, you know, she said to Frederick Douglass, how can you support Black men getting the right to vote when it doesn't include women? You said at the Seneca Falls Convention that Black men and women needed to work together for their rights. So she criticized Frederick Douglass in particular for supporting the amendment for only black men. And he said to her, you know, for black men, this is a more immediate need. It's not about rights. It's about needs. And he said, this is the Negro's hour. It is not, you know, white women don't need the right to vote as much as black men do need the right. So it was something that divided the movement. Eventually, the party that Elizabeth Cady Stanton leads does rejoin the main suffrage groups, come back together. But at that time, particularly in those post-Civil War years, it was a very divided movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you always have race there as a main divider. Tell us a little bit about the Institute and its mission, and what can the visitors expect to see?
Well, the Alice Paul Institute is a historic home in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, about 20 minutes outside of Philadelphia. And our motto, or legacy, I'm sorry, our tagline is to honor her home, Alice Paul's home, to develop future leaders. And we really do believe in Alice Paul's work. Most people know her as a woman suffragist and as the author of the Equal Rights Amendment. So most people call her a women's activist, and she was, but she would rather have been known as a equal rights activist, because she always said, you know, I worked for equal rights, but I did it on behalf of men and women. But most people associate her with the women's suffrage movement. So we do educational programs and, of course, tours and presentations. And some of our more popular programs are our fourth grade history programs. One of them, Meeting Alice, boys and girls learn Alice Paul's story. And they really focus on the idea of citizenship, that, you know, everyone has a voice, has a vote, and also the idea that one person can make a difference. And that goes from voting to becoming a leader like Alice Paul, you know, or simply making small changes in your community. And we also teach girls leadership programs where we work mainly with middle school girls. And we teach them the skills that they need to become leaders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my next question. What advice do you have for young women coming into the whole sense of what's going on in America, and what should they be focused on?
Well, I think perhaps if Alice Paul were around to address young women, she would remind them to participate, to become active, whether it's in their school, whether it's in their community, or whether it's running for an office position. She felt that a lot more women needed to participate in politics, in government, and I think that still holds true today. So we do advise girls that they should speak up, that they should represent themselves in their schools or communities, and not be afraid to take up a cause, no matter how big or small it is, that they can truly be leaders if they, you know, step up to the plate and really believe in what they can do. I think girls in particular, particularly around middle school, start to become intimidated. So we encourage them to overcome their shyness and participate in their school life and events and campaigns and things like that.
Yeah, how did you learn about Alice Paul? I mean, what got you interested in the whole Alice Paul? Was it just taking the job at the Institute, or had you known of her previously?
It actually is a pretty interesting story. I was an undergraduate researcher and looking for a topic, and I kept in the archives in Camden County, New Jersey, kept coming across this woman, Alice Paul. So I had heard of her briefly in one of my history classes, but I decided to change my topic, and I was fascinated not only about Alice Paul, but the fact that she, her birthplace and home was nearby me in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. So I ended up coming as a researcher to the Institute, And then staying on as an intern, and just about 6 months after I graduated from college, ended up joining the staff.
Mm-hmm. Wow, great. So is the institute funded? How is the institute funded? What keeps it afloat?
Well, our funding is from, sometimes state grants or a few federal grants. A lot of community foundations that particularly support our girls' leadership programs. And, of course, we always rely on memberships and donations from our friends and supporters.
So, great. Then we can talk a little bit about the and you have a website as well, don't you?
Absolutely. Our website is alicepaul.org. And we just launched a new website for students called whoisalicepaul.org.
Wow, great, great. So back to the movie for a quick minute. Is the movie something that the students or young folk can see at the museum as well?
Yes, you can see the movie. We do show it. In fact, we just had a movie night, I think about a week ago. And it's geared particularly towards high school and college young men and women to get them to go out and register to vote. So it's a very inspiring movie. Like I said, very entertaining, but also a really great teaching aid for any teacher looking for a social studies curriculum.
You mentioned that before. How is it entertaining? What do you mean by that?
A lot of people thought, oh, this is going to be a boring documentary, but HBO made it funny, lighthearted, but dramatic, too, at some points. It has a great cast. Hilary Swank is Alice Paul. Angelica Houston, Patrick Dempsey is a pretty humorous character in the movie as well. So it's a nice cast that they pulled together. And they really presented the suffragists in a different way, a little bit less serious, a little bit younger, and doing things that young men and women could identify with, like going to the movies and getting together and hanging out, those kind of things.
Okay, so what else can people expect to see at the Institute? Is some kind of visuals, or does it have Alice Paul's, I don't know, her books or documents lying around? What's going on in the museum? What are the kind of visuals of it?
Well, we have a 15-minute presentation on Alice Paul that we show at the Institute before we will take you on a tour. And on the tour, you'll see a lot of documents from her life, her parents' wedding certificate, and Alice Paul's college degree. She had 6 college degrees from different universities in the nation. And you'll also see some of the documents from the suffrage movement, the logo of the National Woman's Party. You'll learn about Susan B. Anthony as well. And we also have a archives. We own Alice Paul's collection when she died, which include her books and documents. And we also have a women's history library at the Institute as well.
Mm-hmm. How many books did she write? What type of books did she produce?
Not that she wrote. These are the books that were in her collection when she died. She was an avid reader. And one of my favorite stories of Alice Paul is that when she was working for suffrage, she kept her room very cold because she wanted to keep working. She did not want to pick up a book, which was her favorite hobby, and sit down and read.
Wow, that's great. Are there any of her descendants, are any of the Paul descendants still around?
Well, there are plenty of cousins in the area, and a couple of them we have connected with. She never married, and she never had children, so there are no additional Paul relatives, direct relatives, but plenty of cousins in the Quaker family tree.
Okay. Okay. Great. Great. And is there a fee to get into the Institute?
Well, sometimes we have free events like the movie nights, and we have an exhibit right now on political artwork. And if you wanted to take a tour, it's $5 a person.
Okay, great, great. Well, we're going to close. Give us a little bit more contact info. How can we, our phone number, our website?
Our website is www.alicepaul.com. www.thewomenofmissouri.org. We have a our email address is info@alicepaul.org, and our phone number is 856-231-1885.
Great. Thank you, Chris Myers, for being with us tonight. I definitely learned something. I've read a little bit about the suffrage, and I recently read Ain't I a Woman, Bell Hooks' book, and I've never heard of Alice Paul, so this is very interesting. Thank you for coming on the show, and this is Push Nevada signing off, just the freedom, and we'll see you next week.